This is a four-week series. I say 4 weeks, but, you know, it's really going to be five because of the singing. Next week is the singing. Now, I came in early, and I tested this thing, and if it fails me now, I'm going to throw it at Chuck. Because I think he could catch it, and I want to vent anger, as opposed to throwing it at some random person who wouldn't be prepared. Ruth, the book of Ruth. How many, I would encourage you, I don't do this enough, I don't think. I would encourage you sometime over the next week or two. Ruth is a small enough book that you could just read in one sitting. It is not very long. I don't know how many pages it is in your Bible, but it's not a very long book, and it's one of those books that you can, so I think you should, just read in one sitting. The benefits of that are you get the entire story in your head, right? You get the entire story, and you can have it sort of in your head as we talk about some things. The book of Ruth is, I like it more. It's a very interesting book, and it's really deep, and it has a lot of different themes. Of course, there's all the kinsman redeemer stuff, which we'll get to later in the later chapters. Setting the stage, Ruth 1:1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Now, the days of judges means what? It means that Judges 21:25, in those days there was no king. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So this is a time, it's not the worst time in Israelite history because they had some really bad times, but it's not great, right? You have a judge, he does some stuff, everybody's happy, and then a judge dies and everybody does what they want and it's horrible. So we've got this repeated cycle of wickedness and then righteous salvation and then wickedness and then righteous salvation. Second, of course, there is a famine. And I think it's these two things, right, that leads this man to leave Judah. Most people don't leave their homeland willingly, although more people do it now than I guess did back then, especially back then because travel was hard and just family, you had a lot of, especially in Israel, you had all the land promises, right? So you had a lot of factors that kept people in Israel, and he needs to go to get food. And I think maybe trying to escape some unrighteousness. And this is a book about two women, Naomi and Ruth. As we go through this book, Naomi and Ruth are the main characters. Of course, we're going to have Boaz later on, but it's really the story of Naomi and Ruth. They have different views, religions, and roles. One is an Israelite, the other's a Moabite. One is older than the other by a generation. And yet, though they're so different through choice and circumstance, there's a lot of circumstantial stuff in this. Now, we did this, I said 3 months ago, in the grand scheme of things. Okay, I just saw Gideon wander across the hallway, but he's with his mom, no worries. I was like, what's going on back there? Anyway, where was I? That was super distracting. So in the grand scheme of things in the Bible, we know what needs to happen with Ruth, right? Because she is eventually going to be in the line of David that will lead to Christ. So we know there's some circumstantial stuff going on outside of the story, God's overall plan about stuff. But in the moment and in the situation that they're in, their specific lives, some circumstances lead them into some interesting places. Let's first consider Naomi. Ruth 1, 1 through 5. We're not going to read 1 again. So this man goes to Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the names of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. That is, they moved there. It wasn't just traveling there, but they moved there. Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died. She was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years. Both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Not a great start for Naomi. Now, I say start. This is pretty far into her life, right? This is not some new thing. This is later in her life that her kids have grown up and they've been married for a while. So this is really not a good end for her life because she's really moved past the marrying age at this point. And so she has to leave her home in Israel because of famine. Her husband dies, her two sons die. And one of the main questions of the book, there's two main questions. One of the main questions is, who is going to take care of Naomi? Now, some context. Of course, I think most of us know this. It was not the same as it is now for women. It just wasn't. Women had a hard time, especially widows had a hard time, and there was a lot of provisions in the law, and this carried forward into the New Testament too, about why it was so necessary to care for widows and orphans, because widows just didn't have a lot of recourse, especially Naomi, who is probably not of the marrying age anymore, definitely not. So she's sort of left with no options. And of course, she's in Moab, which is even worse, because the Moabites probably didn't have all the laws that God did about caring for one another, right? All the laws in the old law. So she's sort of, what is she going to do? How is she going to get what she needs to survive? Where is she going to live? All of these different questions. Who is going to take care of Naomi? How would you react to such a life? This is the question, I think, the first question for us. If this stuff happened to you, what would you do? Just think about it for a moment. How would you react? Where would you go? Naomi's reaction, Ruth 1, 12 and 13, as she's talking to her daughters-in-law. Is it daughters-in-law or daughter-in-laws? It's either way. Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have no hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. So she expects them to remarry, right? Ruth 1:20-21, she said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? Interesting thing about the names. We don't name our kids things that mean stuff. And when we do, who was it that named their child Apple? I can't remember. It was a celebrity. But we made fun of them, right? We made fun of them for that. We don't name our kids like words that actually mean stuff. But a lot of the Old Testament people and even the New Testament people, they had names that meant something. It was a real word, right? It was an actual word. Naomi, in this case, Naomi means pleasant. Her name was the word for pleasant, which is ironic in her mind, right? Don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter. Mara here, this word. This word means bitter. And we've translated, or we've taken the sounds and made the English letters instead of just translating it. I think we lose some of the flavor. What she's saying here, don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter, for the Lord has dealt with me bitterly. Right? She doesn't want to be called Naomi anymore. She doesn't feel like that's her name. That's not who she is anymore. And it's interesting, she views the suffering of her children or her daughters-in-law as her fault. The Lord has dealt with me badly. Save yourselves. Abandon me and save yourselves. I'm going to go back. She's going to go back home. I'm going to go back to Jerusalem, to Israel. You guys stay here. Have a good life. Remarry. Don't be shackled to me. Because clearly I'm the problem here, right? She's bitter. That's what she is. And I think a lot of us, if our spouse and our children all died, we would be bitter, right? Raise your hand if you would be bitter in that circumstance. I would be bitter. I would be very bitter, right? And I think we can see that in her reaction. I said that stuff. Now, she also blames God, as many people do. We'll put this back up here real quick. Right, she blames God when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me. Now, you don't get the sense, as many people in the Old Testament, you don't get the sense that she thinks God is necessarily wrong about that, but she does definitely think it's God's fault that this stuff has happened to her. Now, because we have the whole story of the Old Testament, it's hard to argue with her on this point, that God did actually make this happen. Because we know that Ruth eventually is going to be in the genealogy of Jesus. Well, that's not going to happen unless this does, right? This calamity. It's just not going to happen. So it's hard to argue with Naomi that it was the Lord who brought this calamity upon her. It's hard, of course, it's hard to gauge all that. But I think we struggle, even today, we struggle with the idea of blaming God for our problems. And we don't have the benefit of hindsight. I can say that about Naomi probably because I have this whole book that sort of points to that. In our lives, and I've said this repeatedly, we just don't know a lot of times, but we would rather blame God than be confused and hurt. A lot of our pain comes from our confusion. We don't know why it happened. We don't know who is responsible. And so rather than be confused and in pain, we'd blame somebody, in this case God, because it's easier to blame, I think. And we have to be careful about that. So she decides to return to her people. Let's consider Ruth. It's not like her life has been great, right, up until this point. Now, it's hard to measure levels of badness. I guess less people in her life have died. She lost her husband, father-in-law, and brother-in-law. Now, we don't know how close, of course, she was to her brother-in-law, but her sister's husband, or I say that. I don't know that she was sisters with Orpah. Let's go back and look at that. I don't think she was. No, so she's not connected to Orpah, so she's just lost her husband and her father-in-law, right? That's just a mistake in my notes. So it's not like her life's been super good up until this point. She has married somebody, a foreigner, and now the foreigner's dead, and now the mother-in-law's leaving, and now the father's leaving. And again, she's sort of left into this same limbo of, what do I do? What do I do now? I don't get the impression that her father was around or her family was around. Again, the question for a woman, a widow, is what do I do to survive? So, what does she decide to do? Ruth 1:16 through 18, Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. Where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. When you where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said, "No more." How many of you would do this for your mother-in-law? Just a question. Nobody wants to raise their hand. We usually reserve this sort of language for our spouses, don't we? Like, this would not be out of place as a wedding vow. Like, it basically is the wedding vows that we do, right? I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to go with you, and I'm going to stay with you, and your God's going to be my God, and then wherever you die, that's where I'm going to be buried, right? This is what we do for our spouses. Yet this is a woman saying this to her mother-in-law. Interesting. The level of commitment involved here, right? Turning to somebody who, and it's, we don't have it, right? But the 10 years they were in Moab, I think it's fairly apparent that those 10 years meant a lot to Ruth, the relationship that she had developed and built with Naomi. We have to infer it. It's not necessarily in the text. But I think it's fairly clear that they're not strangers. They don't have an antagonistic relationship. In Ruth's hardest hour, she turns to her mother-in-law, Naomi. She doesn't turn to her own family. She doesn't turn to her own gods and her own people. She doesn't even technically turn to Yahweh, except sort of by proxy, right? She turns to Naomi and says, "I will come with you. I will adopt your gods. I will live where you live. Like, don't make me leave." It's sort of an interesting sense of conversion here, right? It's sort of accidental conversion. She's really dedicated to Naomi, I think, more than Yahweh at this point. Although I think that'll come later on as we go through the story. Instead of what we might consider taking the easy way, and there's just so much, right, we don't know about it, staying where it's familiar in her land with her customs, her traditions, her gods, I don't know. There's a lot of things we don't know about the story, and I think it would be interesting to know what went on in those 10 years and what the circumstance of her family life was like. Like, was her family just all dead? Like, what happened to them? I don't know. But it's not easy as... Either way, whatever happened, it's not easy to go to a different place in a foreign place and live there with their gods and their cultures and their customs and their traditions. How many of you would, again, the question, how many of you would do this for your mother-in-law? Just an interesting question to think about. Now, we would do this, obviously, for our spouses. I think we'd do this for our own mothers. I think we would do this for our children. But this is an unusual relationship, to be sure. If you want to know what commitment looks like, this is it. This is what commitment looks like. And again, notice there's no waffling. There's no fuzzy language. It is definitive. I'm going to go where you go. I'm going to claim your people. Your God's going to be my God. I'm going to die where you die. Right? Very definitive commitment. How many of us have ever committed to something like this? Now, if you're married, hopefully you committed like this to your spouse. But outside of that, again, the question would be, how many of us have committed to anything like this? Did you commit to God like this? I would hope so. we'll talk about that more as we go. We should make God's lodging our home. We should make God's people our people. We should be unwilling to part with Him to the point of death. If you cannot say these things, I gotta go back here. If you cannot say these sort of words about your relationship with God, then you have not committed to God the way that you should. You just haven't. If you could not accurately say this about your relationship with God. Okay. If the first question is, who will care for Naomi? The second question of the book of Ruth is, how will Ruth fare in this foreign land? So Naomi's in trouble because she doesn't have anybody to care for her. Ruth is in sort of the same boat. But now Naomi and Ruth are going to go back to Israel, and Ruth has got to navigate this foreign new land. She doesn't know any of the laws. She doesn't know any of the people. She doesn't know any of the gods. And it's only one God. I wonder if on the way Naomi sort of explains some stuff to her about the old law. It'd be interesting to know all that. So, but this really, I've used the word intertwined several times. Because we're going to see Naomi must rely on Ruth, right? Naomi has no prospects. She has no hope of help. She's just going to go back and hope that the law of God will be enough for her. Unlike Ruth, Naomi was past marrying age. But Ruth must also rely on Naomi. Ruth is not going to go to Israel by herself and succeed, right? She needs the wisdom of Naomi, who knows what to expect in Israel, who knows what the religion is and what she needs to do. And as we go through the story, we're going to see many times where Ruth goes to Naomi and says, what do I do in this circumstance? Like, she doesn't have the wisdom to go to Israel and survive. She needs Naomi to tell her what to do in many different points in the story. So Naomi is relying on Ruth for eventually what's going to happen is Ruth is going to marry and care for Naomi in that way. That's what she's hoping, I think, at this point. But Ruth is going to rely on Naomi just as much. Each without the other would surely have failed. I very firmly believe that. This is a story of two women who need each other to survive. And really, the whole thing with Boaz mostly comes about because Naomi tells Ruth to do some stuff. Ruth, go in this field. Ruth, pursue this guy. Ruth, do this thing to pursue this guy. Right? Naomi's the one who tells Ruth all the things to do in the story. So at this point, what are we going to draw for ourselves from this story? What lessons to take for us? From Naomi, I think we see the question, how do we respond to suffering? Who do you blame when things go wrong? Like, it's just a standard question, right? Where do we turn? And really, where you turn in suffering is a very clear indication of your priorities and beliefs. For all her bitterness, Naomi knows that her best chance is back at home with God's people. She may be really bitter against God. She may be really bitter about what God has done to her. But she still knows, I've got to go back home to where God's people are. That's my best chance. It'd be interesting, I think, in our own lives of suffering, how many times we blame God but still realize that God has the answers, right? There's an interesting tension in our minds there. And I think Job had this point too, right? Job had the same idea. Job blamed God for his suffering, but he knew, I mean, God's still in charge. God's still the one who knows. Right? So Naomi is a good example of having a bitter attitude, but still doing the right thing, still relying on God, still relying on His people, and going home to the place she knows where she can get the most help that she needs. Where do we go when we suffer? I think it would be very easy sometimes for us to just give up and not go anywhere. Right? Do we reach out for help? And Naomi, really, the bad thing Naomi does in this story is she pushes away the people that were closest to her, right? Her two daughters-in-law. She says, don't stay with me. I'm nobody. I'm hopeless. I have nothing for you. And so she pushes away that help. And really, she needs to be thankful for Ruth for saying, hey, don't do that. I'm going to be with you, right? I'm going to help you. Do we, I think sometimes the question we should ask ourselves from Ruth's perspective, do we push through to helping people who don't want our help? And how do we do that? How do we maintain our closeness with people who don't want to have anything to do with us, but we know they need our help? We know that they're not going to succeed if we don't help them. Ruth is a good example of sticking with it even when the other person didn't even want her help. How do we commit to others and to God? How much are you willing to do for those you love? again, this is a very personal question, right? Just think about it for a moment. We could ask it in this way. What are you not willing to do for those you love? Is there something that you would not do? What would you not be willing to do for God? Again, just a question that we have to think about. How are you committed to others and God? How much do you consider the suffering of others? Even in her own problems, which Ruth had many problems, she still sees Naomi's pain and stays with Naomi. Do you get so wrapped up in your own suffering that you don't see what other people are going through? Now, finally, the question, what do we learn from God in this story? How is God going to save these women? Fundamentally, He's going to save them through each other. He's going to save them through the actions of Ruth and the wisdom of Naomi as they go back to Israel and they both sort of stay together throughout the story. When we suffer, we have to ask, am I blaming God for things that aren't His fault? Am I looking to Him and His people for help and comfort? Am I so wrapped up in my own suffering that I can't see the pain of others? God has put us in each other's lives to help one another. How many commandments in Scripture have to do with, even if we just limit it to the New Testament, how many commands in the New Testament have to do with one another? The things that we do to each other, for each other, with each other. He never meant for you to do it by yourself. Naomi, I very firmly believe, would have failed if she had tried to do it on her own. It was because Ruth would not let go, would not abandon her, would not leave her, that Naomi, I think, eventually had the success that she had in life. And we're going to see through the story the necessity of them both relying on each other like we should be relying on each other. I don't know, it's hard to say percentages, but a great many of the commandments in Scripture you cannot fulfill if you're trying to do it by yourself. It's impossible because so many of them have to do with how we connect to other people. And are we willing to be connected to other people in the church? Are we willing to tie our lives to each other in this group? And again, I like this story in particular. Like I said, as I study the story more and more, I get more connected to it. One of the reasons this story, I think, is so great, it's an example of commitment outside of the spouse relationship. So many times we're committed only to our spouse and to our kids. This is somebody who, they're not blood related. Maybe they spent some time together, but Ruth belongs in Moab, but she's willing to tie herself to this other person, this foreigner who doesn't belong where she belongs, who doesn't come where she comes from. How many of us are willing to connect ourselves to the people that are different than us in this group? Maybe they don't like the same things. Maybe they don't have the same sort of background. Maybe they don't have the same sort of whatever you want to put there. Being willing to be connected to those who are different than us in this group. Just a question that we need to ask. The book of Ruth challenges us to reevaluate, our commitments to God and each other. Now, as we're going to go through the story, we're going to see a lot about providence. We didn't talk as much about providence tonight, but we're going to see how God works in providence in His people. We're going to see how God works through His law. A lot of this story is about how God's laws set up ways to help people, and then how that was fulfilled in the story of Ruth, right? Between Ruth and Boaz. So we're going to see a lot about God's providence as we go through the story. But at the beginning, I think we need to ask ourselves about our commitments to God and each other. Not just your spouse, but your friends, the people in the pew next to you, the people in the pew behind you, the people on that side of the room over here, you guys. Are you committed to these people? Keith is looking over there and smiling. I don't know if any of you saw him. Are we committed to each other? I hope so. I would like my life to be interwoven with yours. Because aren't we going to spend eternity together in heaven? Raise your hand if you want to be in heaven with the other people here. Let's start now. Be connected now. Be committed to each other now.